everyone. This is Molly Douthat.
And David Douthat.
Welcome to More Than Hearing, a podcast to encourage preachers to use multiple intelligences in sermons and worship leadership, because there are plenty of ways to reach someone's soul.
Today, we're covering Math Smart and Body Smart for the lectionary selections for Transfiguration Sunday, Year C. Moses comes down the mountain and has to veil his shining face in Exodus, and then Paul writes about it in Corinthians. Psalm 99 is an exhortation to extol the Lord. And the centerpiece of the day is Luke's description of Jesus' mountaintop transformation. Will our illustrations and special effects help your sermon shine in glory? Let's find out.
This podcast is based on Dr. Howard Gardner's theory of multiple intelligences. Dr. Gardner suggests that there are multiple ways to learn, process, remember, and understand our world. Each week, centered on the weekly readings of the Revised Common Lectionary, we develop illustrations and special effects using various smarts based on Dr. Gardner's identified intelligences. Over the course of 4 weeks, we will cover Word Smart, Eye Smart, Math Smart, Body Smart, Music Smart, Nature Smart, People Smart, and Self Smart. You could read more about Dr. Gardner's work by clicking at the link at the top of our webpage, morethanhearing.org.
Join us as we explore ways these intelligences can be utilized for a deeper appreciation of God's Word. Then we encourage you to try it yourself. Anytime and any way we can make use of the different smarts, we give people greater access to the Word of God so they can acquire it, process it, and internalize it in ways that make sense to them. Let's get started.
Hey everybody, welcome back. We did not do Transfiguration Sunday 3 years ago.
Nope.
We had started working on it, and then I wrecked the car.
Yeah.
So
it was a bad week.
It was a bad week, yes. So we opted not to do that particular Sunday. So we don't have anything to look back at for previous work on this particular Sunday.
No, but we do have two other Transfiguration Sundays.
We do. There are two others, Year A and Year B. So, right. Yes, it's the other gospel's account of this particular
experience?
Yes, that was the word was not coming. Good thing I'm not doing Word Smart this week. I'm doing Body Smart this week. So Body Smart, as we have talked about already several times, I'm sort of paraphrasing Gardner and Waring here, is that people who are Body Smart have a keen sense of body awareness, particularly their own. They like movement. They like making things. They like to touch things and feel things. They communicate very well through body language and can be taught through physical activity, hands-on learning, acting out, and role-playing. They process knowledge through bodily movement or through sensation. They enjoy physical activity and are constantly in motion, even while sitting down. These people really, really like to move.
Indeed.
And need to move.
Well, I'm looking at Math Smart this week, or logical mathematical intelligence, and quoting from Diana Waring's website, dianawaring.com, she says that folks who are math smart are good with numbers and or logic, hence the name, I guess, whether math, science, or engineering. And we usually put science-y sorts of things in our math smart.
Unless it's got something to do with like earth science, then that sometimes
often
bleeds
in
over into nature.
Right. Yeah. She goes on, this is the ability to reason mathematically, discover abstract patterns, classify and organize, enjoy mathematical computations, and think logically. This person needs to see the logic and organization in what is being learned. Mm-hmm. So again, this is for education, but a similar thing would happen in worship. Mm-hmm. So math smart people like anything with numbers, equations, and how you clump numbers together. Mm-hmm. And they're also very fond of charts and graphs.
Venn
and
diagrams.
Diagrams and all those sorts of things. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we love the Venn diagrams.
And they work so well,
they
really.
They do.
They really do.
There are so many applications. Mm-hmm. So that's what we're going to be doing today with a little luck. I mean, grace.
Maybe both.
Yeah.
The gospel lesson for Year C, Transfiguration Sunday, is Luke's account of this story in chapter 9, verses 28 through 36, with the added verses 37 through 43a at the end, which is what happens when they come back down off the mountain. I've read a lot of different commentary already this week about the choice you have to make here. You can either do just the transfiguration and, you know, try to describe and do something with the mystery of all of that, and apply that somehow to the lives of discipleship, or you can take the transfiguration and bring it down off the mountain to the man with a son who is seized by a demon. That's your choice. I've read a lot of commentary that have good pros and cons for both options. I think if... Well, I don't know. I haven't decided whether or not I'm going to actually use this particular passage Sunday or not, but I think I'm inclined to use them both if I were to do that. So anyway, we have Luke's version of the Transfiguration. This is the only version that has Peter allegedly not knowing what he's talking about here in verse 33, at the end of verse 33, after he says, "Let's make three dwellings," there's this little addendum, not knowing what he said, which does not show up in Mark or Matthew. Apparently Luke is...
the apologist.
Yes. Right. Anyway, so that is what we are working with here in the gospel passage. And so verse 29, where Luke says, "The appearance of his face changed." This made me think of, and this is the illustration I have for this passage. This made me think of the last wedding that I did when we were still living in Ohio. I was marrying this young couple. They were in their 20s. They were, you know, very dedicated and devoted to one another. She was really into this idea of this is the guy, he's the one. And I think he understood that he had a real treasure here and he was not going to do any better. So anyway, so I had, you know, done some premarital counseling with them and had, you know, been kind of getting a sense of them as a couple and was not, you know, seeing any major red flags and I shouldn't be doing this. It was like, yeah, we're going to bless this. We're going to send them on and, you know, surround them with prayer and hopefully they'll grow into each other in their relationship. So the day of the wedding, I got to the church and I went and I found him and he was being his nervousy, groomy self, you know, the way the guys are beginning of a wedding. And then I went to go find her and I was speechless. I didn't recognize her. And it wasn't because, you know, I knew she was the bride because she was the one wearing the white dress.
Yeah.
But I didn't recognize her. And it wasn't just because she wasn't wearing her usual glasses. She was transfigured. She was so radiant. I have, you know, they talk about brides being radiant. And usually a lot of that is, you know, kind of makeup and hair. But this woman, she had the makeup and the hair, but it was coming from inside of her. She was so confident and so certain that this was where she needed to be and who she needed to be with that it just shone out of her face. And I literally couldn't take my eyes off of her.
Wow.
And so during the service, you know, I would look at her. Oh, yeah, I have to follow the script. Yeah, it got a little distracting from time to time. I mean, she was transfigured by the experience and her inner joy at what was about to happen.
Wow, so, cool.
Yeah, that's my illustration. I actually saw somebody transfigured once. So I have got two different special effects you can try with this. The first one...
Does it include trying to find a couple to marry?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, it does not. Sorry.
Probably just as well.
Yeah. Well, actually, you preachers, you may have your own experiences of that. There may be some transfiguration you've seen in your to-be-married couples. Yeah. Anyway, so first special effect. Here we go. Encourage everyone to sit with their eyes closed, you know, get calm, get peaceful, and imagine in themselves in a peaceful place, a still place. Get really settled there, you know, however you need to do that. And then into this place comes the person that you most want to see, living or dead. It doesn't matter. It's the person you most want to see. So encourage them to feel the response in their bodies, heart rate increasing, blood rushing throughout the body. Maybe they sit taller. Maybe they're even smiling. Maybe they'll laugh or they'll cry with joy. So that is an experience of how one is transformed by the inner life. And it shows up in your body, literally in your body, the rush of the hormones and the heart rate and the breath and things like that. So that's one way of doing this special effect. The second one, consider using the priestly blessing from Numbers to end the worship service. That is, may the Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face to shine on you and be gracious to you. The Lord lift up his face to you. And David frequently adds this phrase, place his cheek next to yours and give you peace.
I don't know where I got that. It's not original to me.
No, it's... Oh, it isn't? No, I thought it was.
No.
I've always loved it because there's such a kinesthetic experience of that, of God lifting up his face on you. I mean, for what there's kinesthetic right there, you know, of seeing God's face, but having God's face right next to yours, cheek to cheek. There's so many, this is a real people smart thing too. I mean, so many different relationships where you put your cheek next to somebody else's cheek. And how you do that, is it left cheek to right cheek, which is, you know, side by side, or is it like an embrace, like holding each other in embrace and your cheeks being next to each other? And as you do this particular blessing, and when you especially say the parts about the face, invite people to touch their faces and imagine that's God touching them. So that's what I have for body smart for the gospel passage. What have you got for math smart?
Well, for math smart, an illustration, I start off thinking, you know, that Peter is relying on inference and deduction from a limited amount of evidence to conclude that booths is what is needed in this situation.
He didn't know what he was talking about because he didn't have all the information.
Perhaps so.
Okay.
I mean, of all the possible conclusions that one could have upon seeing such a vision, this is one of them.
Yes, it is.
You know, but
yes, it is.
Why he chose that particular one is between him and the Lord, I guess. But it's the sort of calculation you do when someone is talking to you, but you kind of fade out and you aren't really paying attention, and then you realize...
No one ever does that. You never do
Never do that. And then you suddenly realize that they've stopped talking and they're expecting you to respond, and you have to quickly pull together something from the bits of content that you think you heard and the context from where you exited the conversation.
Got a bit of fluff in my ear.
And try to create a reply that you hope will have some bearing on the actual conversation. Right? So, yeah. So
it sounds like a comedy routine.
So
who knew math could be so much fun?
Yeah. So it's a mathematical deduction or a logical deduction from limited
evidence.
Data. Yeah. And mathematically, you might be able to use a graph to go along with this. You might not need to, but if you want to press on and use the graph that math folks will like, then just draw in the graph of a simple equation like y equals x plus 4.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it's pretty basic.
Mm-hmm.
It defines a line, basically, and it's a slope of 1 going from lower left to upper right on the graph, and it crosses the y-axis, the vertical axis, at 4.
Right.
So that defines all the possible solutions to that equation.
Right.
So any point along that line is an answer for the equation. But what do you do if someone asks you for the one right answer?
Are you listening?
You might say, well, for what value of X? And they say, no time for that. Just give me the answer. Quick, they're leaving. Right? And you have to pick one. And that's what Peter did. He just picked a number. You know, he
so
picked a point
like
on the line.
That's kind of like all those TV shows where you're trying to defuse the bomb.
Yeah.
Which one?
I don't know. Just clip one of the wires. And, you know, it's sort of like I don't know, maybe you've had that experience in a dream. I've had that experience in a dream where you have to come up with the answer and you don't know what the, well, what are you talking about? I don't, just give me the answer.
Seven.
And speaking of dreams, you know, dreams have their own kind of logic. And maybe you can remember having a dream where something like this happens, or things are happening according to the certain internal logic of the dream.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone in the dream knows that, yes, that's the way things
course,
work here.
Of course.
Right. But you have this odd sense that that doesn't make any sense. And when you when you wake up and you think about it, it's like, oh, that's nuts. You know, what was I thinking? And maybe that's what Peter's experience is like, except in reverse. That he was applying his everyday common sense fisherman's logic
right
to a situation that
defies it.
Yeah, in this super reality of the transfiguration, it makes no sense at all.
Right.
So the logic parts of that are what make it math.
Yeah. Yeah. That's fun. That's a lot of fun.
So a special effect, use projection equipment or an easel pad or something to do the graph of the equation thing, and feel free to demand the right answer from someone in your congregation that you choose pastorally, of course,
right,
you
right,
know,
of
someone
course.
That can okay. handle that kind of pressure. Okay, let's go on. The epistle lesson for Transfiguration Sunday, year C, is 2 Corinthians 3, verse 12, through chapter 4, verse 2. Here, Paul is referring to the story that we'll get to in a little bit from Exodus about Moses coming down the mountain with his face shining, and it freaked the people right out.
Right out.
Right out. So he begins, since we have such hope, we act with boldness, not like Moses who put a veil over his face. And goes on talking about that and how the people's minds were hardened, it says, and that to this very day, when they hear the covenant read, the same veil is there, but it's only taken away by Christ. So, yeah, that's a little awkward, especially in an interfaith community.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. But anyway, he goes on, the Lord is spirit, and where the spirit of the Lord is, there is freedom. And we, with unveiled faces, see the glory of the Lord. He goes on talking about that we are being transformed from one degree of glory to another. So that's kind of interesting. And then the way it turns to chapter 4, therefore, since it is by God's mercy that we are engaged in this ministry, we do not lose heart. We've renounced shameful things, and we refuse to practice cunning, and we commend ourselves to the conscience of everyone in the sight of God. Yeah, there it is. So if you do this one, you'll definitely want to read the Exodus passage
yes.
with it, I think, or you'll have to rely on it heavily to make sense of it all.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at it from Math Smart, an illustration might be that what would the world look like if you could only see it in one frequency of light? What if you could only see red, for example?
Would everything else be black and white or shades of gray?
No.
You would only see red.
Only see
you would run
what
into
is red.
A lot of stuff.
Yeah. So if it didn't have any red in it, it would be black.
Yeah. So I'm looking around our room right here, and I see our coffee cup and a couple of books on the shelf behind you. And
there's some red glow that might come off the walls, you know. And,
oh, from refracted light?
Yeah.
Okay.
So there,
so you'd know
you
where
know,
the light, the sunshine
some,
is.
Yeah.
Okay, but everything else is black?
Yeah.
Holy cow.
So, you know, the grass would be mostly black. The sky would be mostly black, except at dusk and dawn.
Right.
Right. So you'd be missing a lot of information.
Yeah.
And you would have a very different understanding of your surroundings. So this is what Paul suggests happens for the people of Israel when they try to understand the teachings of Moses. That they are looking through a veil, as it were, so that they do not get the full picture of mm-hmm. what's going on. And it's only when Christ removes that you get the full understanding. So what if you're in that condition and someone suddenly gave you the ability to see blue and green?
Then you see it all.
Then you're going to see pretty much everything. And that's what Paul suggests happens to those who come to believe in Jesus.
Cool.
It's math for the science aspects mm-hmm. of it, but there's a lot of eye smart in there too. Mm-hmm. And then you can press it into a special effect, get some colored cellophane, mm-hmm. and make filters by fastening it to a frame made from construction paper or cardstock or something. So, you know, like a half sheet mm-hmm. of construction paper or whatever, and maybe a 3x6 filter area. So it's big enough to hold in front of your face. And,
right. So you're kind of like making a glasses
yeah,
sort of thing.
Yeah. 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 And so make a bunch of those. And if you can, make enough for everybody mm-hmm. or maybe, you know, a couple people, 2-3 people might have to share, but mm-hmm. so that everybody gets a chance to look through them and see what you're looking at. And you can either do all one color or maybe a mix of colors so people have different experiences. And mm-hmm. when they're looking at things, they see different stuff. This is actually something that we did at the star party that I went to in West Virginia last summer.
Looked through different filters?
Yeah, yeah. And the presenter had some pictures that were set up to highlight the different colors from the filters. And you'd only see a couple of things in the picture, and then the rest of it would be black. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you're looking around your room, you're going to see stuff that's, and you have a red filter, you're still going to see most of everything.
But because
there's a lot of reflected
light.
But if you set up a picture that's, you know, on a black background with different blotches of color, mm-hmm. you know, a red sun or an orange sun, maybe, you mm-hmm. know, so that the sun shows up as different colors through different filters. And she had like hills and grass and a lake and some creatures, you know, and mm-hmm. and some of them were basically red and some were mostly blue and some were green, you know. And if you, depending on which filter you had, you would only see certain objects in the picture.
Cool.
So if you can set something up like that, you know, mm-hmm. that would be cool to do. Mm-hmm. If you can't, well, that's fine. Just use the filter to look around and think about what you would be seeing. The opposite of this might be showing pictures of what things look like in frequencies that we can't see with our eyes, but other species can, mm-hmm. Or that we can see with cameras and detectors, like infrared, ultraviolet, or X-rays. Mm-hmm. And NASA does all kinds of this multi-wavelength photography to get a better picture of stuff out in space. And so we've got some links for you to some pictures that show things in different frequencies of light, different wavelengths of light. So we have some pictures of the Crab Nebula, for example, or the nearby galaxy M81, and how they look in different wavelengths of light.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, for body smart, holding the filters up to our eyeballs would be kind of an interesting sort of a passive body smart activity too. But for body smart, I caught on two different things. One, beginning in verse 12 about we have hope and act with great boldness, which made me think of people who have such faith in the integrity of their equipment. They have no fear of injury or doing things like high wire work or gymnastics or rock climbing or hang gliding or skydiving or scuba diving or any other sort of assortment of activities that humans are not designed to do because we don't have wings or gills.
Uh-huh.
So there's kind of a body smart illustration there that you have sure. The hope that we have in the resurrection of Jesus gives us the capacity to act in ways that ordinarily we might not. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that action is physical. And, you know, they do say that love is a verb.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Cool.
For a special effect, play the improv game Mirror. And this is based off of the last part of verse 18. We see the glory of the Lord as though reflected in a mirror, and we are all being transformed into the same image. So the improv game Mirror, the idea is that the follower mirrors the leader so seamlessly that the observer, people watching them, can't tell who's who, can't tell who's the leader, who's the follower. Mm-hmm. So what you do is you need to get a companion to work with you on this. Stand about 6 or more feet apart from each other, and you need to look at each other, but not into each other's eyes, because that's a little distracting and kind of intimidating. What you do is you stare at the bridge of their nose, right between their eyebrows. And so that allows you to see the entire person without, you know, darting your eyes around and getting distracted. So if you pay attention to the bridge of your partner's nose right between their eyebrows, and if your partner moves very, very slowly, you can mirror their actions without anybody knowing who is actually leading. And we are doing it right now. Yes. And you, whoever the leader is, you need to move very slowly and do big grand moves so that the person following you can see you, see in quotes, mm-hmm. and adapt. So instead of, you know, like quickly lifting a hand or something, you very slowly lift your hand, and then that person can see what you are doing.
See, we're so good at this that the audience can't tell which one of us is leading.
I know. Yeah. Anyway, I also have a quote about this particular passage from Adam Thomas, writing at Christian Century. He's talking about the veil. And he says, the veil is his stealth technology, my armor of avoidance. With increasing frequency, it's more than simply metaphorical. It's my iPod earbuds hanging from my ears, or my phone plastered to my face, or my huge Top Gun sunglasses. Anything that creates a buffer zone between you and me.
Hmm.
So there's some body smart adaptations that we use as a veil that affects our people smart interactions.
Indeed. Some self smart in there too. Huh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, quite. All right, let's go on. The psalm for year C, Transfiguration Sunday, is Psalm 99. And I think the reason it has been selected is because Moses is mentioned in verse 6. Also a pillar of cloud in verse 7. So I think that's why that's there, because they connect to the Exodus and Luke passages. But anyway, there is a great deal of praise that is happening in this particular psalm, and it didn't seem to have a heck of an awful lot of body smart in it itself. So what I'm doing is I am applying body smart to the psalm using some movement as the psalm is interpreted. Mm-hmm. So invite the congregation to move with you. And I have some ideas that are on the worksheet, which you can download at www.morethanhearing.org. Scroll down to the psalm in the worksheet, and you can see some of the ideas I have, such as when it talks about the people trembling in fear. So, you know, cower or shield your face with your hands. Anytime it mentions praise or God being holy, lift your arms and your face and look up. Establishing equity, hold your hands in front of you like scales and sort of do that balance thing. Justice and righteousness, cross your forearms across your chest, Wakanda forever, or hold them out like strongman arms one at a time. Justice, righteousness. When it talks about the footstool, kneel. Either one or both knees, and do the holy is he, lift your arms and your face again. Oh, and you cry to the Lord in the kneeling position, clasp hands in front of your face or your chest in a praying position. When it says that God answered their prayers, stand up. This is an interesting one, because the psalmist talks about how God answered the prayers of Moses and Aaron and Samuel, the priests that cried to the Lord and God answered them. Verse 8, O Lord our God, you answered them. You were a forgiving God to them, but an avenger of their wrongdoings. So forgiving, as you're standing, place one hand on your heart and look downward as though you have been forgiven, and hold the other hand palm upward for the avenging of the wrongdoing. So yeah, so you can just kind of do that in your body. And then worshiping, and the last declaration of God's holiness, wave your arms above your head, and then do the
Like you just don't care.
Exactly, right. If you have anyone who does liturgical dance in your congregation, maybe ask them to see what they could arrange to do for this particular psalm. I'm sure this psalm has music somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And so you could find musicians who would play it and have someone read it and have your liturgical dancer dance it. And if there are other people in your congregation that are body smart, encourage them to maybe even just join in spontaneously. That could be really cool.
Mm-hmm.
All right. What have you got for math smart?
I have virtually nothing. So I was afraid this was going to happen when we started doing the show this way, that when we limited ourselves to a single smart, that there would come a time when it's like, there's just nothing. But what I finally came up with was just wondering, when I was a kid, I was big into Star Trek and Spock.
A kid?
That's where it started.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, sorry. It's still with me. Spock was a hero for me, and the logic thing, right? So, if you're not familiar with, he's such a cultural icon. I can't imagine people don't know Spock, but he's the logical counterpart to Kirk. I was wondering if someone who approached life through logic would be able to, would find it logical to extol the Lord as described in this psalm.
Mm-hmm.
I tend to be more of an emotional person than a logical. It depends on the day
and the circumstances.
Yeah. But my go-to is probably the emotional side. But and so when I come to worship, for me, it is an emotional experience. But is there logic to worshiping a being who is so far greater than yourself? And I think there is, if for no other reason than perhaps self-preservation.
Right.
Acknowledging this being is so great. And in order not to get squashed, I'm going to, say so. It's in my best interest.
Right, to appease this deity.
To appease the deity and to acknowledge the deity's greatness.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that might be the logic of of that kind of thing. And
so
it's
that's
not
a transactional kind of.
It is. Yeah. It is. There's also. I think it might also be that you could do that without it being transactional and just acknowledging this is the fact.
Yeah.
That this being is excellent.
Yes.
And does powerful things.
Yes.
So let's say so then.
Right. Right.
Right. So it's naming the truth.
Right.
And I'm just thinking of this now.
But not in an effusive way. Just acknowledging the fact that
this is the way it is.
This is true.
Yeah. And therefore, we will extol the Lord because this is true.
Huh.
And
there you go.
That's not something that I think is promoted a lot in worship experiences in our culture anyway. It's very transactional and it's very
transactional.
Very emotional.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of an interesting way to go at it. So there's a little bit anyway. Let's go on. The Old Testament lesson for Transfiguration Sunday Year C is Exodus 3. Verses 29 to 35. This is a story that we have referred to already when we were talking about Corinthians, where Moses comes down from Mount Sinai bringing the commandments, and his face was shining in such a way that people were afraid to come near him.
Yep.
And he calls them to him so that he can...
They're like, no, we don't want to go near you.
It's like, no, it's cool. And so Aaron and the leaders anyway came near and he told them what had happened. And then after telling them the commandments and such, then Moses puts a veil over his face.
Right.
And whenever he goes into the tent of meeting or goes up the mountain and speaks with the Lord, he would take the veil off. But when he came out, he would put it on so that the people would not be afraid.
Right.
And it says the Israelites would see the face of Moses, that the skin of his face was shining. And Moses put the veil on his face again until he went to speak with the Lord. So, yeah, a prefiguration of the transfiguration, as it were.
Right.
For Math Smart, again, you know, sometimes these are just really, really challenging. But, okay, so I came up with a special effect to create a flow chart for Moses' behavior, because they're just these steps that happened through the story, and the way that it's told, it just clicked in for me that it's kind of the logic of a flowchart,
right?
Where you come to a decision: are you doing this? Yes, no. Okay, if yes, then do that. If no, then do this.
Right. Right.
The flowchart. I came up with an example, and so the points of decision: are you coming down the mountain? Yes, no. Do you have the commandments of the Lord with you? If no, then go back up the mountain.
Go find those things.
Yeah.
Where'd you leave them?
Yes. Okay. Are the people afraid to look at you?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Is your face shining?
Yes.
Then put on a veil. Okay. All right. Are the people now afraid?
No.
Okay. Tell them what the Lord said. Okay. Then go talk to the Lord some more. Is your face still shining?
Yes.
Yes. Put on the veil. Right. Are the people afraid to look at you? Yes. Is your face shining? No. Maybe have Aaron talk to the people for them.
Right.
You know,
right.
They're just afraid of you. Right. So anyway, that's kind of how it goes. And we've got that on the worksheet, so you can download that and take a look at it.
It's an interesting way of getting into some of the other intelligences of this passage too. The who's afraid and why, and that's some people smart sort of stuff, and
right,
maybe there's
right.
some self smart stuff in there too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, examining your own behavior and your own appearance, and does that put people off?
Yeah, yeah, the veiling for the people, not veiling for the Lord.
God. Right. Is, yeah. What's that? What kind of relationship does that imply?
Right.
Right. Yeah. Right.
So then if you develop the sermon in such a way that you're including some behavioral instruction for your congregation, then maybe put that in the form of a flow chart too.
Right.
And, if you're not a math smart person, if you don't know how to flow chart, obviously that's going to be challenging for you.
Yes.
But if you do have some background in that, or if you know somebody who
could help you with it,
then that might be a way to go. That's what I got.
Cool. All right. Well, see, you can find the intelligences. Sometimes you sort of have to squish them a little bit.
You do, very often.
So for Body Smart, one of the things that I first encountered as I started looking at this is Michelangelo's sculpture of Moses. Moses has horns.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And the reason he has horns is because of the word in Hebrew that can be translated either as shine forth or horns.
Huh.
You got to kind of wonder why can that one word be translated? Well, maybe so. But it is also entirely possible that Moses' encounter with God scorched him. That he was touched in the deep essence of his being, and his figure, his appearance was transfigured. Mm-hmm. So maybe people couldn't bear to look at him. And so the idea formed that somehow he had been disfigured.
Hmm.
Which made me think of radiation poisoning. Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Or severe burns.
Okay. Yeah.
Because sometimes people who have been severely burned are so utterly transfigured, so utterly transformed that it's hard to look at them.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that involves a great deal of, well, there's a lot of self and people smarts and those sorts of things. But anyways, so if Moses was disfigured by his encounter with God, that necessitated the veil being worn around other people. So he had to put on essentially a mask. Mm-hmm. Which again led me on down the path, and I thought about the end of the movie Beneath the Planet of the Apes.
Oh, uh-huh.
Where the mutated humans who have been living on this earth reveal their true faces to the god of their god, the atomic bomb that mm-hmm. they are worshiping in this silo. Mm-hmm. And so they've had generation upon generation of radiation poisoning. And so their true faces are seriously disfigured. And I watched a little clip about the making of the movie, and the person who was charged with the makeup effects yeah. was trying to come up with all sorts of things. And he had some really super grotesque thoughts. And some of them included things that were protrusions. Mm. Mm-hmm. Looked like, you know, horns and stuff on people's faces. And then what he finally came up with was the idea of just pulling off skin. Yeah. And so the faces of these worshipers had a lot of exposed veins and musculature.
Yeah.
So it was kind of scary.
Yeah.
But anyway, there's an example of how maybe people, their true selves are masked. And maybe that Moses' face was so very different and so hard to look at because of the experience he had with God that the veil was necessary. Otherwise, maybe Moses' shiny face looked like the T-1000 in Terminator 2. The very shiny metallic guy.
Yeah.
There are a couple different points in the movie where his true face is revealed, and he's very shiny.
Yes.
So, got a couple options for special effect. We tend to really shy away from unusual facial features. It's very much the lizard brain asserting itself in us. Ah, scary, run. Mm. But what if, when we see someone who has been burned or scarred or who is tattooed or pierced or is in any other way different in appearance from the norm, what if we were to see in that face someone who has seen God?
Hmm.
Or, if not seen God, been seen by God and loved by God?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So give this as a task, as homework for the week. Encourage people to see the person behind the face. And, if possible, pass out some small mirrors and encourage people to take some time to look at their own faces. Look at their skin, the shape of their eyes, the color of their hair, the shape of their faces. Don't critique. Do not judge. Just look. And then, once people have actually taken the time to do this, tell them to look at themselves as God sees them, with love, mercy, grace, and the appreciation of an artist for that artist's work.
Mm-hmm.
So this mm-hmm. is a very much a body smart activity because it encourages engaging with a part of the body, your own face, but it's also a very self-smart experience for being able to sit with a revealed self. And if you choose to do that homework assignment, it also involves some people smart for looking beyond the mask or the veil and seeing the people behind them. That's it for today's podcast. Please ask questions or leave us a comment on our website, www.morethanhearing.org, or at facebook.com/morethanhearing, or tweet us at morethanhearing, or email us at connect@morethanhearing.org. If you tried any of these suggestions, or maybe got an idea that you like even better than ours, please let us know what you did and how it went. We would love to hear how using this theory has made a difference in your preaching and worship.
Remember to check out the show notes, worksheets, links, and resources at our website. They go hand in glove with the podcast and give you lots more material to work with. Don't forget to subscribe using the links on the website for iTunes, Google Play, Android, or good old RSS. Or point your podcatching software at morethanhearing.org/feed/podcast. Help others find us more easily by writing a review at the iTunes Store. And of course, you can always share the show with your friends and colleagues. We'll be back with another episode next week. So in the meantime, stay subscribed
and be smart.
The number you have dialed is not in service at this time.
This is a Whippet Good production.
So, there you have it.
There it is. Now you know.